Hello, this is Gidon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 20th of Kislev. Today we're going to discuss Chatam Sofer's view of issues of defining rabbis and of deciding the authority of rabbis. So two different shivot that he wrote on the 20th of Kislev that touch on that topic. One is from Chatam Sofer, Chelek Hei, the fifth part in the Choshen Mishpat section of that part, Kuf Samach Gimel. 163, he's writing to two rabbanim. One is an old rav, one is a young rav, and he addresses them appropriately for their status, but he says they both have the same question. They wrote a letter together, or separate letters about very similar issues. And this is about somebody who got a smicha. It's called smicha rachachamim. The question of smicha is sort of a somewhat complicated one in halacha, because while we speak in the Gemara about smicha, in the Gemara, the smicha that we speak about is when somebody is certified to have mastered the Mesorah, the entirety of tradition, such that they are a link in the chain going all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that kind of smicha, which has halakhic ramifications, was lost sometime during the period of the Gemara. You don't have it anymore, and that creates all sorts of issues. That's why we have a fixed calendar, for example, because we didn't have smuchim anymore of that original type of smicha. We couldn't establish months al pi ha-ri'iya, whole complicated question of its own. There's also certain punishments, certain kinds of court punishments that can't be administered unless the judges have that kind of smicha. So that went away. Later on in history, as the Chatam Sofer will talk about in the 1400s in Ashkenaz, they developed another kind of a smicha. So there's a smicha called Morenu, and that was to try to certify that somebody has qualifications, even though it's not that original smicha at all. So now we have somebody who's Nismach B'smichat Chachamim. So he's got a smicha, meaning some rabbi gave him a smicha, somebody gave him a smicha, but he doesn't have the job of a rabbi at all. He is not a mori hara. So the question is, yesh lo kol din rav, af shelo nitkabel bishum ir. So the way the question is asked, it sounds like they think that unless somebody's in practice a rabbi, is in practice been accepted by a community, he doesn't yet have the full status. And you can imagine somebody explaining that as being sort of, unless he's grappling with real world problems, unless he's really, in the parsha of being a functioning rabbi, he's really doing it, he doesn't yet have the full status of a rabbi. So the Chatam Sofer says, Pashut etzli d'linyan ladun bin ish l'chaver, if two people come, and they want this person to just explain to them the halakha, or tell them they're having a fight about money, right? They think so-and-so thinks so-and-so owes him money, or the other way around, right? It could be that other so-and-so thinks that so-and-so owes him money. So for have this person who's got a smicha that says he knows Torah and he understands Torah and he's got the background to be able to rule on such issues, so that he thinks is okay. Same thing, Larop Easter Vehet there. If a piece of meat, we don't know what the story is with a certain piece of meat, or with certain dishes, so that's a question of just knowing what the halach is about those questions. So in those situations, the Chatam Sofer says, L'talya klal b'kibolet b'kabalat kila. He doesn't think it's dependent on a community deciding that this person should be their rav. So you can have some person who knows a tremendous amount of Torah, but either he chose not to become a community rabbi, or no community has decided they want him for various reasons. It could be he's too stringent. It could be he doesn't publicly speak well enough. There's all sorts of reasons that somebody would not be great to be a rabbi in a community, but it doesn't affect, the Chatam Sofer says, the fact that when he gets a smicha, that certifies that he has certain kinds of knowledge which might be valuable and applicable to certain situations. So as long as it's true that rabbanim, right, that already existing rabbis have said that this man has the status and the justification to be a rav, then you treat him as a rabbi in these ways. And you can learn that from the Trumat HaDeshen, and he's got a three different simanim about it, who's discussing about, let's suppose you're in a city and there's in that city another Torah scholar, and that Torah scholar, let's say, is even a greater Torah scholar, but they accepted this person to be the rav of the city. So does he have the right to? Right? Can he become the Rav? So the answer is yes, he can become the Rav. And then if somebody else wants to move there and live there and also give Piskei Halacha, so I'm not looking up the original Tshuva because we're interested in what the Chatam Sofer wrote on the 20th of Kislev. This is for the 20th of Kislev, as it happens, of Tov Kuf Samach Hei of 1804. So the Truman Edition, it said, another person could move in there and also talk about halachic issues, how you'd work out the politeness and not ruling against the Rav. We'll get to a little bit. He says, you got to make sure that you don't mix in with the parnassa, with the livelihood of the Rav. Meaning, if there's a man in town is the rabbi of the town, and let's suppose, for example, as it used to be true in America, that the way he makes his living really is by selling chametz on Pesach. He gets a small salary from the shul, and then by doing weddings and funerals and selling chametz on Pesach, they give him money, and that's really his salary. That's really the way that salary goes. And that used to be true, and it was not a good way for it to work, but that's the way it was true. So if I were to say, I'm also a Torah scholar, maybe not as good a Torah scholar as that guy, but I'm also a Torah scholar, I'll sell chametz for people too. And I'll do it free. I'll do it for less. So that is a problem, because then there's a financial competition with the original Rav. But we have a general principle of Yagdil Torah V'yadir, that the more Torah there is, the better that it is for Torah, because Torah benefits from the competition. Torah benefits from people putting out pieces of Torah. And Kinat Sofrim Tar B'Chachma, we generally say that the jealousy among Torah scholars to try to have their voices be heard and try to succeed with their Divrei Torah and their Chidushei Torah increases wisdom in the world. So the Truman Edition says there that this other person could judge Dinei Mamonot, and he could arrange weddings too, because those are situations where you need the people involved to be happy with who's doing it for them. So if they like this guy better than they like the community rabbi who's been set up as the rabbi of the community, so for sure for a Beit Din issue, for a deciding a halakhic question or a monetary argument between people, there you do hopefully want that the litigants accept and appreciate the person who is passing judgment for them. So if they don't, could be a problem, because then they might reject the din and they might question the halachic validity of the psak that they got, of the ruling that they got, and therefore you don't want to do that. So too, with arranging a wedding, the Maharik had said that it's similar to having a chazan. And when you have a shliach tibur, when you have the person who stands up there and is a representative of the community in their prayers to Hashem, so there too, there's halach and shulchan aruch that you don't want somebody who the community doesn't like. So it gets complicated, because let's say the majority of the community is happy with Hashem Chazan and some minority is not. So those are halakhic questions that come up, but it's not the answer that simple majority rules and tough luck on everybody else, because when it comes to Shliach Tzibur, you very much need somebody who people appreciate in terms of that they feel that this is a good representative for them in their discussion with Hashem. The Marik thinks that's true of Mesader Kiddushin as well, that if somebody's going to arrange a wedding for a young couple, that you want the young couple to see that person as the person that they want, and if you just force somebody on them, that's a problem. Then the Chazon Sofer says, but with all that, obviously, he doesn't say obviously, I'm saying obviously, you have to be sure not to get into the financial way of the rabbi. That can always make it difficult to navigate and not know when you're allowed, when you're not allowed, because it's hard to know what gets in the way. Meaning, let's suppose I'm going to start a shtibel, right? I'm going to have a small little shul, I think it's going to be 20 people, and I figure that's not going to take away from the livelihood of the communal rabbi. But if you're in a town where there's sachakol 200 families, if I do my job too well, then my shtibel gets more and more crowded, then the money dries up for the other shul and for the community fund. Anyway, it can get complicated, but fundamentally, the Chatam Sofer seems to think that it's not true that in order to be considered a rabbi, a functioning rabbi, in terms of judging court cases, judging litigations between Jews who turn to this person who wanted to be on the court, and or in terms of forming weddings, there's no fundamental reason that's prohibited, even if you're not the town's rabbi, even if you're not, haven't been accepted by any town, he thinks that doesn't get in the way of considering it a smicha that's valid, and that this person is a valid Torah scholar for the ways in which we evaluate the validity of Torah scholars. In fact, he says, it can be better sometimes. When can it be better? So when a community has to levy taxes on people, so for example, let's say the government says the Jewish community owes this. This is what they used to do. The Jewish community owes this, and then the Jewish community itself would have to decide who owes what. Right, so what if you get into a litigation about that? The people in the community whose job it is to assess the members of the community, you know, based on finances and based on membership in the community, and they say so-and-so person owes, you know, $20, and so-and-so says, oh, that's way too much. I do not owe $20. Do you want to go to court? Who are you going to go to court in front of? So you say, well, go to court in the local shul, the local Beit Din. The problem is that local shul and Beit Din have the local rav, the local rabbi, they have a stake in these events because the health of this community is important to them, so they're not completely objective. So, too, if it's time to build a new bathhouse, right, in the days when people didn't have indoor plumbing, and so there was a communal bathhouse, and that's where people were able to clean themselves, so the costs of that were placed on the community as a whole. Again, it was a matter of assessing people. Today, we would just say, well, we'll just raise the money. So it wasn't the tradition for hundreds of years. That wasn't the way Jewish communities work. You didn't just rely on the kindness and the generosity of people around. You had appointed people whose job it was to hopefully soberly and with good will and sincerity decide who owes how much to make sure this project got done. If you had arguments about it, then the judges of that city should halakhically not be able to be part of the court case because they are nogim badavar. They have a stake in what was going on. Now, it happens to be that the common custom by the time of the Chatam Sofer was to follow not a ruling, but a note in Choshen Mishpat, which says that they found ways, I think, to say that we all accept them upon ourselves, even though they're not valid, right? There is a workaround in halacha. If there's somebody who really shouldn't, or who halakhically isn't able to impose himself as a judge in a certain court case, but the litigants all agree that that person will be the judge, so then it can work, even though that person theoretically should, by strict law, not have been a valid judge on that case. That's what we tend to do. But the Chatam Sofer says, points out, if there's a Rav in the city, a Torah scholar in the city, who's not dependent on the city for his livelihood, and it's not his role to be concerned about the finances of the city, so he doesn't talk about why he's not concerned because this person would himself have to give some money. It seems like the reason is that he gets a livelihood for the community. This is Rak Notel Parnasato Mikupara Kahal. He gets his livelihood from the communal pot, and he gets it no matter what. So that's he's got a fixed stipend. And his fixed stipend doesn't really depend on
the other issues that come up. It depends somewhat, but the Chatam Sofer thinks that by virtue of the fact that it's a fixed stipend that's not as dependent on the finance of the community, he can be considered less of a nogeya badavar. He doesn't have as much of a stake in the way the community arranges its finances, and therefore he might be even a better person than other people, than other Talmidei Chachamim in that city, than the rabbi of that city, and stuff like that. And it's certainly true if this person doesn't even get anything for the community. He gets it from rich people, right? He's got a private arrangement with some rich guy in town, or he's a malamed, he's a private tutor to somebody, such that his livelihood comes from something completely different than the communal funds. So even more so that person would be available to judge, although the community could still say, no, we prefer the communal Rav who's always there and knows our issues and knows our concerns and knows our problems better. All the more so, says the Chatam Sofer, let's say there's no Rav in the community. And what they do is they turn to what today you might call a halachic advisor who lives outside the community or a few. They have Rabbanim outside the community and they turn to them. So then this person who wants to be thought of as a Rav, who's a Talmid Chacham in the city, so he can't say, you know, I'm going to be a Dayan now, I'm going to judge these issues now, because those Rabbanim from outside, they're certainly more kosher than this guy is, because they have no connection to the city, they're just being asked away, and they're, you know, sometimes when you're away from a situation, you can be more objective, whereas this Talmid Chacham, so he's not a Rav in the community, right? So he doesn't have that status. And there's no minhag to say that he should be allowed to be the Dayan of the community unless they decided that they wanted that. And yet, in our case, we're talking about the fact that in that community, they don't have such a thing. They turn to people outside the community. So he doesn't have any of those rights. In other words, because I was ever saying both things are true. One thing that's true is that this person, just because he's not a communal rabbi, he doesn't have an official position, doesn't take away from his ability to do certain functions, like judge among litigants if they want him to, or perform weddings if they want him to. On the other hand, if an issue comes up that you'd think that the Rav of that community or the judge of that community are considered Nogim Badavar, and therefore they couldn't rule on it, so certainly this man who's not a Nogim Badavar, because his finances don't depend on it, would not would have the right to judge because he's not an ogeh badavar, but he doesn't have the right to impose himself on it. Because if the community decides that they prefer to go with their community, they have the right to accept upon them. Litigants in any situation have the right to accept upon themselves certain people as a judge with halachic ramifications. That's all the more so true if the practice of that community was to turn outside, to turn elsewhere for their halachic psak. So then all the more so that this guy who's got some nikiyut, some stake in the game by virtue of the fact that he lives there, so and they turn to people completely outside who therefore have the assumption of being more dispassionate and therefore more able to objectively judge the situation, and therefore he certainly couldn't insist, even if he has no financial stake in it, no obvious financial stake in it, he could not insist that they should listen to him. Okay, so that's the balance of the truck. Now, that's a smicha chacham, that this guy's a talmid chacham. But there was also a smicha that was given out in those times called a smicha either morenu. So morenu is like a lower level of a smicha, and it means that you've learned some Torah and you're a good guy. I think that's what it means. And there's also a smicha chaver. And a chaver today, you still have people who will go by the title chaver. So the Chatzim Sofer says, she'ein lo shoresh bashas. There's no basis in all of that in the Gemara. I'm not sure that's true, because you have a chaver in the Gemara. Chaver are people who are strict, who are careful about halacha. So it could be that people came up with the title of chaver, thought they were doing something along like that. But that's the way the Chatzim Sofer says it is. It was just a custom of the Ashkenazim from the time of the Maharil and the Maharival, which is, I think, the 1400s. He says, and there's no real tradition about where it goes, where it doesn't go. And he says, so I'm going to tell you that what I was taught by my teacher was, the Chatzim Sofer says, Shehu kerem kadmonim, shelo liklot chaver mishino musmach. He says it's like a cherem kadmoni, which means that there was a decision made by a group of people to not allow something. A cherem is when you say we'll sort of shun or excommunicate anybody who does X. So that's what a cherem kadmoni means. It means that a group of people from a long time ago decided that if you do X, it's going to be a problem. So he is saying that his teacher taught him that it's a cherem kadmonim, shelo likrot chaver, the only people you call chaver, and chaver, like I said, in the Gemara, is a title that men, you keep halacha well, and we can trust you keep halacha well, you're a person of eminently trustable halachic status, right? So that's to be a chaver. So you only do it if they have an actual certification. And my revile in Kuf Chav Chet said that the smicha is also shelo tehe bilti reshut v'atarat chacham. So that's what he says it is. Now, in those times, though, Maharival also said that the smicha is only if a Torah scholar gives it. And then he added, which is an interesting question in terms of what qualifies, who can give the smicha. The common thing is to say that anybody who's a rabbi can give a smicha. So, in fact, the Chatzim Sofer points out, if you look at the Maharival in Kuf Chav Chet, what he actually says is a tofes yeshiva, is somebody who has a yeshiva. So let's remember that in those days, having yeshiva was a much less formal thing, and therefore much more frequent, because many times when you became the rabbi of a community, part of what the community guaranteed was not only that they would pay you a salary, but they would also provide students, meaning there were students around looking for places to learn, right? So if a community said, we have room for 10 students, they'd find the 10 students. They would come, and they would spend a few years learning with this rabbi in the community, and that would be part of it. So, point being, that person now is not only a community rabbi, he's also a tofes yeshiva, he's teaching Torah, and therefore he knows what it is to watch students, I think it means, he knows what it is to watch students progress to the point that they're ready to be rabbanim themselves, and that would be the person, Maharival says, who has the status to do it. So Chatzim Sofer says, that's talking about the smicha of Moreinu. In any case, it would still mean, though, that in our times, it wouldn't be true that if I'm, let's say, just a stam communal rabbi, I have a shul somewhere, you know, in wherever it is, even if I've learned a lot of Torah, the Maharival would seem to think that I don't have the right to give smicha. That to be able to give smicha, you have to have a yeshiva where you're giving regular shiurim and guiding regular students. But it sounds there, says the Chatzim Sofer, that it's only because, or that it says a little bit, it's not clear, that that's because of getting in Kiddushin, that you're worried that you'll give a smicha to somebody, and they'll decide they know how to oversee divorces and marriages, and that can get very complicated halachically and very problematic because if you do it wrong and you give wrong information to somebody, people can create mamzerim unwittingly, and you don't want that to happen.
So that would have then meant that maybe for other purposes you can give smicha if you're not a Tofes Yeshiva. But the Chatam Sofer notes that if you look there later on in Kuf Mem Zayin, it seems like he thinks that it might even be true about a smichat chaver, that it's such an important issue that you have to do it for these purposes, that unless you have, so Chatam Sofer says, unless you have 10 students in a yeshiva, you don't have the right to give a smicha without permission to give smicha, unless you have permission from, you know, the local important Rav, the head of the Medina, the head of the state, who will certainly have those kinds of students. So Chazozer seems to be saying that his understanding of smicha, even for something like chaver, which chaver is not such a big deal because it doesn't have any real roots in the Gemara, and because it seems to be a question of just announcing that somebody is a good guy, basically. It is a Shomer Torah Mitzvos, basically. It doesn't have any ramifications, and it's maybe a Cherim Kadmonim. Nonetheless, if you look in the Marivayel, it seems like even for a smicha like that, he seems to assume that you need to be either a Tofes Yeshiva, to yourself have 10 students, or to get permission to give smicha, not permission to be a Rav, but just to give smicha from the local Gadol, as we would call it. Then the Chatam Sofer throws in. That's all in the time of my revival. But he says, Nir Eli, and a phrase I always like because it's a sort of paradoxical, it says, Kalkalatenu Takanotenu. Sometimes the fact that we have degraded something, right, descended in its value, helps us actually do better about it. How did that happen? So in this situation, Bimehem Nagusil Sul. They really treated people who were called chaver in a very respectful way, and therefore they only gave that smicha to a person who had learned Torah, who had taught some Torah, and also was exceptionally careful and punctilious in his observance of mitzvot, as it says there in that tshuva. But later generations, so this aladimik chaver was, if somebody is the financial support for a community, if somebody is the rich person in the community, and they give, you know, tzedakah generously. Now, that can be true, even if a person is not necessarily otherwise the most remarkably observant person in the world. And they support Talmid Chacham, they support Torah scholars, right? And they raise their children to study Torah, and so to give them honor, you say, all right, you're a chaver. I've seen that happen today, right? You'll give them the honor, and people are very pleased with it, and they appreciate it greatly. But the Chatam Sofer says, he's not saying it's wrong, he's saying it's not what it was at the time of the Maharivayal. If it's not what it was at the time of the Maharivayal, that opens up the possibility that then you don't have to have the same status of a person to be able to give the title of a chaver. Right? If the Maharivayal says, to be able to certify that somebody is a chaver, you need to be a rav, you need to be a rabbi of a community, and you need to be a chacham tofes yeshiva, you need to have a yeshiva with at least 10 students in it, that might only be true if the title you're conferring has important meaning to it. But if the title you're conferring has much less meaning to it, so then the standards might also be much less. And he says, maybe back then, even back then they were doing, that was true, but even if it was true back then, that was what was going on, you'd need somebody who could tell who was how religious, as it were. You'd need an important rabbi to be able to notice the difference between people who just happen to throw in money and people that happen to be really fine, good, upstanding people, deserve the title of chaver. But nowadays, said the Chatam Sofer, you have people who don't know anything. Right? They don't know how to read. They don't have to read Torah. They don't have to learn. They're not really involved in the world in a way that makes them great people. It's not like they're nice to be around. I mean, they don't have good character necessarily. So, and yet they give them the title of chaver because they give a little bit of money, right? He says, "Koneh chaver be'agurat kesef achat." With a small amount of money, they buy the title of chaver because they like being called a chaver, right? It would be similar today if there were to be such a thing. They had somebody who wasn't really that religious, didn't really care about religion, but they like titles, and they decide to get involved with a shul, and they say, all right, you put me on the board, I'll give you $1 million. So you can imagine the board would do it. Sometimes the board would do it for $20,000. So whatever the amount of money is, the Chatam Sofer is saying is, but it's degraded the title. It doesn't really mean as much anymore because you have people who are called chaver. It's like today, the English word rabbi is a word that applies in America, for sure, to people who are important rabbanim, important gedolim, important Torah scholars and giants of Torah, and it applies to people who aren't, from an Orthodox perspective, for sure, even observant of mitzvot, and even have any belief in whatever, and it's just an English word, rabbi. So that English word rabbi is somewhat degraded. So here, too, the word chaver is not quite like that. But the word chaver, says the Chatam Sofer, since it's so degraded in that way, because anybody can get it, so it doesn't matter as much who gives it the title. So theoretically, he's saying, you don't need to have a yeshiva to be able to give the title. But he says, Mikom Makom Yu Asumchim Rav O Beit Din Kavua Shebair. But it should be the Rav of a city. So even if the Rav of the city doesn't, or the local court of the city. But even if, so even if they don't have a yeshiva where they train students, there, it is the custom of the Jewish people that this title of chaver only comes from the rabbi of a shul, or from the rabbi of a community. Today might be the rabbi of a shul, or an established Beit Din in the community, because you don't want just any three. The phrase in the Gemara is roe bakar, people who shepherd cattle, right? Who you know, cowboys basically, to be able to come and give smicha to whoever they want, and this, and then that'll make a complete joke of it. So what you want is that you have somebody who has some status to make these kinds of decisions, to understand something of the seriousness of it, something of what the title means, so they can give it only to those who really deserve it. And he says, he closed by saying, I don't have really more to say about this, because there's no real basis in the Gemara to make decisions about these issues, and therefore I've written what I had to say. So he's noticing, A, he's already written about it, he's already said what he thinks, but he's also noticing that sometimes, there are halakhic questions that arise, or practice questions that arise for the Jewish people, where there's no real basis in halakha to make a decision, and so he shared his view, but he didn't have much more to say about it, because he didn't feel like he can prove anything. That's one tshuva from the 20th of Kislev in the Chatam Sofer on these kinds of issues. The other one, I'll do much more briefly, but it's two sides to a question of, he himself had a student, Zeligman. And this student, Zeligman, was living in a certain place, and one side wants him to be the rabbi, and they've already said he should be the Rav, and they were, according to the report, the majority of the community. The majority of the community both in the financial support, and the majority of the community both in the numbers. But there are these other people who disagree, and they say they don't like him, and they don't want him. And what they want, this minority, is there's another guy who's older and is more respected already, meaning more well-known, and they want him to be the Rav, and this Zeligman will be a Dayan, which is also a communal position. He'll be the local judge of issues that come up. So he'll have a position, and they said, and they have enough money. There's always, I think, always a question to ask carefully, although this tshuva doesn't ask it at all. They say they have enough money to support the two of them. That's always, to me, a danger sign. In any case, so this is Zeligman. It's unclear in the tshuva, but he seems to have wanted to try to avoid fighting. And he said, to avoid the fighting, he said he signed on to something saying that he accepts upon himself that he will not do anything beyond a certain date. Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan of Tav Kuf Tzadi Hei. This tshuva is dated Kaf Kislev, Tav Kuf Tzadi Hei. So it's dated after this. So he said he wouldn't do anything until beyond Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. And then from then, he wouldn't do anything until the whole community understands. But then, in his home, as it were, privately, people gathered to him. And it's a lot of people who gathered to him. And they said, no, we want you to be sort of like, if you're the Rav of a shul, and the shul doesn't like you for some reason, there's a fight in the shul. And let's say you could win the fight in the shul, but you'd win it with 55% of the vote. So what many rabbis in that situation would do is, they would say, I can't be in a shul where 45% of the community is so upset with me, so I'll leave. But then they start a little shtiebel, right? So I've seen this happen more than once. So they start a little shtiebel, and then people come to them. So sometimes that little shtiebel is no threat to the original shul, and therefore it's just, so you ignore it. It's not great, but the new place has its financial support. The old place still has its financial support. Let's assume that's true. And it goes on, and people, and there's a split, but it goes on. But sometimes it's not possible, right? Let's say the new place is threatening the financial health of the old place, or there's just so many people, right? So in this case, the claim is that it's Rav Binyan and Minyan who went to him and now have it, right? Because in his case, he had the majority. And let's say the majority actually also went with him, which isn't common at all. Usually what would happen is, even if the majority had voted for him to be the rabbi, if he then had left and went to a small shul, they would stick in their building, because Jews would become very attached to their building. But in this case, they were going with him, and now they want to know what to do because they've got this problem. So the Chatzim Sofer says, it's a very brief tshuva, and I'm going to take it even more briefly. He says, there's two parts to the tshuva. One is, maybe this guy isn't worthy of being a Rav. And then the second question is, didn't he say he wouldn't be the Rav anymore? And there's other issues that come up. So on the first issue, he says, you know what? I know this Zeligman. He came, he talked to me, I tested him, I spoke to him, and he knows He told her very well. He knows both halacha and agadah. And the Chatzim Sofer says, and the reason why you want to check the nose agadah, because that's how moshkim leiv adam, that it draws people in. Meaning, even already back in the 1800s, you wanted a rabbi who had the ability to connect with people. And while he had to know halacha, because halacha, law, and how we rule and practice is an important thing, you also needed a rabbi who's going to be able to connect with people. But the Chatzim Sofer says, but I checked, and he does know that stuff. And he can connect with people, as far as I know, and that's why I gave him a smicha. I gave him the right to be a Rav. But, he says, it's not right, it's not appropriate to force yourself on people and just to make it that you're going to be the Rav, even though there are plenty of people who don't want you to be the Rav. So he says, I don't suspect that this minority who are complaining have some ulterior motives, because God forbid, nobody would do such a thing, right? They know that Hashem is there, and they know Hashem is watching them, and they would never, right? So I'm not sure if he's being naive, or if he's being polite, or if he's just trying to say he can't judge it until somebody comes along to really get involved in the situation and hear from both sides fully. It's unclear to me. But basically what he says is, I can't judge this fully, and what you need to do is, and this is what he's commanding, the two sides, within 30 days, find three judges, right? So each side will take a judge, and they'll find a third judge, and they'll find three judges, and they'll go before the judge with their claims, and that court will decide it, because I can't decide it. So that, and then he says, and my student Zeligman should not do anything like being a Rav in ruling on anything or anything like that until this happens. Right? That's my ruling for him. And then he says, and please read this letter. This is where he closes it. Please read this letter in public and explain to everybody what I'm saying and what's going on so they can know my ruling on this issue. And therefore, I think no, to stay away from having this Zeligman be the Rav until such time as they have the ability to figure out what's going on. And it's dated the 20th of Kislev, Tav Kuv Tzadi Hei, also of 2000 and, no, I'm sorry, I apologize. This is from 1834, and that was his ruling on this. So two tshuvot from the 20th of Kislev regarding around the same issues, revolving around the same issues, the question of rabbis and how we pick rabbis, who is qualified to be a rabbi, and when we do and don't choose them, and what procedures we use to figure out who should be our Jewish communal leaders. Have a great day.